Welcome to the Queensland Country Hour. In the next hour, as the citrus harvest cranks up, growers are faced with another looming oversupply and are considering whether to keep growing imperial mandarins at all. And when you think of asparagus, for those of you like me who love the stuff, you'd probably be aware that during the winter months, a lot of it comes to your supermarket shelves via a South American destination, a long, long way away. But the good news is there may be a closer local alternative on its way.
It's drier climate here than on the coast, which is a great benefit to it. We've got lovely, well-grown soils, which it appreciates. Yeah, no, it's all, from what I know of it, it's going good.
I wonder if you can guess where it is. Yeah, that's my only riddle for today. It will be solved very, very soon when we take you to the grower of that new asparagus crop, the newest in Australia. A lot of interest being shown in that. And something that won't take any guesswork at all is the undisputed home of Waltzing Matilda. You, along with everyone else in Queensland, it would seem, will be heading to Winton in the next month or so. In the next hour, I should say. I'm only going to be on air for an hour, so stay with me. But first up on the program today, and maybe because it's Friday, already my mind is turning to cheese and bickies and maybe a glass of wine or two that I'm looking forward to when I knock off at the end of the day. But there are some European countries who want Australian producers and exporters to stop calling cheese feta, and they're demanding that winemakers rename Prosecco. Now, this is ahead of the free trade agreement that's being signed with the European Union. There's some pretty big ambit claims being made at the moment, particularly by France and Italy. They're even saying that we have to come up with another name for that smelly stuff that we like to pile on top of our spaghetti bowl. And apparently, they don't even like us using the Italian flag colours when branding our products. I'd love to hear from you this lunch hour, if you are tongue-or-cheek or not, how you feel about these ambit claims being made ahead of those free trade agreements. 0487 993 222 is the number to text. I asked Carolyn Davidson from Towery Sheep Cheeses how she feels about being told to desist from using traditional names in branding her products.
Back in 2005, when I first started making sheep cheese, there was a whole big thing about it then of not calling brie brie and feta feta. And so I just sort of thought, oh, well, I'd better find my own names for them.
And that's when you came up with Baja. I just love it.
Baja.
So that's what you call your feta.
Yes.
But you've broadened your range since then.
Yes. Our Cheshire is our Cheshire.
Cheshire, E-W-E, of course it is.
Our yogurt is our yogurt, which is actually copyrighted that. And the only one I haven't changed is our Pecorino, and we've just put Towery in front of that.
So you can get away with Pecorino, you reckon?
Well, only because I haven't thought about a better name for it.
It'll come to you.
It will come, yes. It might come sooner than later now.
Yeah, well, there might be a bit more of an impetus now that we are entering these discussions with the European Union. And, well, some of the member countries over there, we already know that the French won't have a bar of us calling our sparkling wine champagne. But now they're getting touchy on the topic of cheese and wine as well. What do you make of all of this?
Look, I think it's actually a good idea. And I know I've got a lot of people who won't agree with that. But why not push our own names, our own regional, you know? That's what they did, and they've made a very successful business from it.
That's what they did centuries ago, though, in the modern era where these kind of names, Pecorino, Prosecco, Feta, they've become a part of our everyday vernacular. Can they really now take a license out on them?
Well, I still have the problem with our bar jar because people will say to me, what sort of a cheese is it? And I have to say, well, it's a feta style. So, yes, it's a bit like things like Gurney's and, you know, the water blasters and things. We all know them by Gurney's because that was the original one.
It's the brand name.
Brand name. Mm.
And when you go to put your bar jar in with some cucumber and some olives and some other classic ingredients, is it still a Greek salad?
Yes, it's still a Greek salad.
So where is this heading for your business? Because they're quirky names. You're a niche product in a big global market, but not so well known here in Australia. How do you cope against those more recognisable names and brand names on the supermarket shelf?
I guess I'm probably a little bit sheltered from the fact that we don't have ours on supermarket shelves as such, because we are a niche market. Our main business is our on-farm tourism. So we obviously sell it all on-farm, but we also sell online and to celebrity chefs. So the celebrity chefs is not a problem, because they've obviously heard about us and know our product. So when they order, they know what they're getting.
And from a tourism point of view, I guess you having that personal contact enables you to explain the backstory, and people have a greater understanding of your product anyway.
That's right.
So you do have some sympathy for some of your counterparts in the dairy and perhaps winemaking sector that could be losing some sleep over the fact that they may no longer be able to brand their product according to these kind of traditional names?
Oh, yes, I do. And I do see the other side of it as well, because, you know, you've got your Syrahs, you know, your cold climate Shirazes and your Shirazes. And so what do we, you know, I know a lot of people have, a lot of wineries have changed their names, but there's a lot out there that still call them Shiraz and Syrah. And then we've got the Chardonnays. And so, yes, no, I've got a lot of sympathy for them.
But you've put a positive spin on it, because at the end of the day, Australians do it better anyway.
Exactly. Look at sparkling and champagne.
Exactly. Well, Carolyn Davidson from Towery Sheep Cheeses, thank you very much for coming onto the Country Hour and giving us your unique take on a story that's captured the headlines today.
Thank you.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Don't get mad, get even, says Carolyn Davidson from Towery Sheep Cheeses. She's on the scenic rim and admits openly that she has a fairly unique situation with her niche sheep milk products. But how do you think this is going to go down for other producers of these established names? Feta, Prosecco, Parmesan. It's a bit rough, isn't it? Mark from Noosaville has text on 0487 993 222. He says, renaming cheeses and wines, etc., I think we should keep the original name, but have to use it in conjunction with the word style. So there's a practical solution from Mark. We just make that distinction that it's a feta-style product instead. So love to hear your thoughts if you'd like to add to Carolyn or Mark's comments, 0487 993 222. On to more serious matters, though. The situation at Mackay Sugar Limited, I just don't think they can win a trick at the moment. The state government says that it's been charged. MSL has been charged over the alleged release of effluent water into nearby waterways in the Marion Mill region. The company has been charged with one count of willfully causing serious environmental harm and three counts of willfully contravening a condition of an environmental authority, which is currently before the Mackay Magistrates Court. In a statement, the Department of Environment says that the charges occurred in August 2016. So far, we are yet to hear from Mackay Sugar. It's declined to comment and has not yet entered a plea.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Where you're with me, Charlie McKillop, at 14 past 12. It's been 3 years since the Kaleo family, long-time vegetable growers near Charters Towers in North Queensland, discovered a suspect plant in their watermelon patch. But despite the loss of that crop and another full year of production while the property was locked down with cucumber mosaic virus, the Kaleos are now looking to the future. Out of the ashes of that fateful watermelon crop, Anthony Kaleo has planted asparagus, which he admits is a bit out of the box. And while it's too soon to know if that roll of the dice will pay off for the Kaleos, Anthony explains to Tom Major how the devastating biosecurity outbreak forced them to reassess.
In the past, really only grown watermelons and pumpkins, which are both vectors for the virus. So we're looking at ways of not just utilising ground that's being spelled, but also different crops. Dad went to a, I think it was DAF meeting where the Japanese were talking to growers about soybean, asparagus, a few other crops to export to Japan, and that sort of got the ball rolling. We did speak to the Japanese about exporting it. When they want it is not when we want to supply it, so we're just going to do it for local markets.
What's the gap in the local market at the moment?
From my knowledge, the gap is through winter. The southern fellas can't do it, it's too cold. And during winter, a lot of it's imported from Southern America.
So this is what you'll be covering, I suppose, that part of the year. Tell us a bit about growing it in this very warm tropical climate that we've got here in Charters Towers. How does it go?
Yeah, no, look, it's been going pretty good. We have learned a lot. We transplanted at the wrong time of year, in October. It was too dry, too hot. We wouldn't do that again. It's drier climate here than on the coast, which is a great benefit to it. We've got lovely, well-drained soils, which it appreciates. Yeah, no, it's all, from what I know of it, it's going good.
At the moment, it's at this pretty lush, ferny stage. Tell us a bit about how it goes from here on in. What do you go through to actually get it to a harvestable stage?
So we'll leave it now until about probably May, June next year. We'll let the tree grow up, not so much for the tree's sake, for the root system, to get a nice established rootstock. And then once it comes to harvest time, we'll mow it all off, and the new spears that come up will be the eatable stuff.
Is this the first time it's been done in the tropics, or have a few other people sort of blazed the way a bit for you?
No, there has been some grown little bits here and there. A while ago, I'm pretty sure there was some grown in the Burdekin, up in the upper Burdekin, and I have a feeling there was some even grown locally here, but that's a bit of a rumour as well.
What does it go through in terms of needing that cool snap, I suppose? Does it require quite a low temperature overnight to get to the spear stage?
It does require a dormant period, which we won't get here because our winters are still too warm. We're hoping, and this is still a hope, hence why it's only a small trial, is to make it dormant by starving it of water. Because our winters are so dry, we have the option of turning the water off.
So it's still a bit of a work in progress in a way, I suppose. But what is it looking like at the moment? Have you been happy with its progress?
Oh, certainly, mate. Yeah, it is a work in progress. It's one thing to grow the plant, it's another thing to actually harvest it. So we'll sort of learn as we go.
The next step then is waiting that 12 months, and then the proof will be in the pudding to an extent. Tell us a bit about what sort of role you hope it will play in terms of your farm, you know, covering the periods where you do have to fallow some land.
Well, it's going to make use of areas that are not in watermelon production. It's not a great thing for us to be doing with our watermelon rotation because it's such a long-term crop. We want the ground back in 3 years, but for a small area it's fine at the moment, and look, it could turn into a great thing and we grow more and more of it and less watermelons. It's going to give us the opportunity to keep a few of our workers employed in the watermelon off season, keep people here instead of getting new people all the time, and just keep that cash flow moving instead of having a period where it just all stops and it all goes out. Yeah.
What's the value of the potential winter asparagus market in Australia?
Oh, look, that's a bit hard to say, really. Yeah, we're still a long way off harvest yet. It's over 12 months, so, we'll worry about that when we get there.
One thing at a time, Anthony. Kaleo there, looking to the future, growing watermelons and now asparagus at Selheim, which is just near Charters Towers in North Queensland. He was speaking there with our reporter, Tom Major. And you can check out Tom's online story at abc.net.au/rural. I encourage you to do that. There's some terrific photos and further insights on the diversification that the Kaleos are trying. But here's some big news. Researchers have confirmed that bees are able to pick up and move that cucurbit virus, which was so devastating to the Kaleos 3 years ago. It struck elsewhere in the Bundaberg district. It even wiped out the melon industry in the Northern Territory a couple of years ago. And who would have thought that bees, so vital for the pollination of horticultural crops and the fact that they are encouraged to travel from one to another, could also be carrying these deadly virus. Now, Mary Finlay-Doney from the Northern Territory Department of Primary Industries explains the research on the link between bees and cucumber green model mosaic virus.
We have found live virus inside hives, particularly in honey. At this stage, we've done a number of field trials, and those have also been supported by field trials that have been done in Israel that show that bees are able to move the virus around in the environment. But we don't know if that happens when the bees visit an infected flower and then go to a clean plant and a clean flower, or if it's possible for bees to take virus out of their hives and reintroduce it into the environment. That's a question we're still trying to answer.
So basically that's the risk, that if a bee is pollinating a plant on one farm, it goes back to its hive, it's boxed up, it's moved to another farm to do some pollination, and then the infection. That's the big question that's still yet to be answered.
Yes, so CGMMV is a tobamovirus, and that's a group of viruses that are mechanically transmitted. So they can be moved by tractors driving across a field, or by using secateurs on an infected plant and then cutting a clean plant. So for us, when we think about bees pollinating those plants, if you're in an environment where CGMMV already exists, then a bee moving between plants acts in a similar way to a tractor driving across the field or secateurs cutting plants. The big risk for us is that the apiaries, the beehives that are used to provide pollination services in the Northern Territory and indeed around Australia, travel large distances to provide those services. So the bees may be moved from Katherine to Alice Springs, or in the case of the east coast of Australia, bees can be moved from Queensland to Victoria to provide pollination services. So you're looking at human-assisted movement of a virus, potentially human-assisted movement of a virus.
That's Mary Finlay-Doney, a research entomologist with the Department of Primary Industry, speaking with Dan Fitzgerald there. And a little later in the program, we'll bring you another big breakthrough in horticulture. If you're a grower, imagine if you could halve the amount of black plastic you have to lay down to propagate your crop and grow your crop. I'll bring you that news very soon.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Geez, it's been a rough few years for the Western Queensland town of Winton, hasn't it? The drought has just dragged on. And then out of that also came a fire that destroyed the Walsing Matilda Centre, devastated the community at the time, and put a big dent in the local tourism industry. Well, today, that's all in the past. There's a renewed sense of optimism in Winton because that iconic tourist attraction, which celebrates the spirit of Walsing Matilda, well, it's back. It's opening up today, and Melanie Groves is there. Melanie, how's it feeling around the main street of Winton today?
Oh, jubilant, Charlie. Everyone is very happy to be here. There's a lot of fun and frivolity going on. There's a lot of people out on the main street and a lot of tourists and locals alike, and they're all having a really good time today.
And that's all part of the Way Out West Festival, but without a doubt, the most anticipated part of this is the reopening of that Walsing Matilda Centre. Just take us back to the time when the news first broke of this fire and the terrible images that emerged straight after that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really big thing for the town of Winton to have lost it in the fire. It was a really big hole that was put into the tourism of Winton here. However, it's been a couple of years since then. It was a long road, but now the building is back and everyone's really looking forward to hopefully a bit of a tourism boost that's actually going to come with the introduction of this new building.
Now, I know that the centre director...
I'm actually...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, go for it.
I'm actually here in the building at the moment, and we've gone through it this morning, and it's looking fantastic. It's really unique. It's got beautiful concrete walls, which have got really interesting patterns and shapes, and it's just shaped really differently and really, it's a really unique building that's completely different to anything else we've seen like it out here in the West.
Uh-huh, so it's coming back even bigger and better.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people are thinking that it's, with the updates of technology as well, everyone's really thinking that it is bigger and better than the one we even had here in the past.
And how are the locals feeling about it? Melanie, have you had a chance to catch up with a few this morning?
I have actually, Charlie, and I think a lot of the locals are really ecstatic to see that there's a bit of movement in the community as well. And actually, someone that I do have here who I've been talking to right now is John Elliott, who is the Winton Council Tourism Officer. And I think he can speak more for the locals than I can. So, John, after 6 years of drought, and you know, quite a long time of not having the Waltzing Matilda Centre here, how important is the opening of the Waltzing Matilda Centre to the second biggest industry out here, which is tourism?
I think it does two things. It was a physical space that was empty, and it was almost a spiritual place that we lost. So with the new building, it's spectacular. It's filled in the empty block of ground. But more than that, after hearing the Governor-General, Peter Cosgrove, this morning, sometimes we lose sight of the fact of the importance of the song. So it was exciting to hear Peter Cosgrove describe where the song fitted into the culture and the spirit of Australia. So we're ready to fly the flag again for the song here in Winton.
Absolutely. And part of that is the strong culture that comes along with the Waltzing Matilda song. You know, it has this really strong history with grazing and the sheep industry out here. And we've recently had a little bit of rain, but not drought-breaking rain, but enough to put a smile on some people's faces. How are the locals feeling post a little bit of rain and now with the opening of the brand-new centre?
Well, the flies have been unbearable, but I think they're slowly going away. Hopefully they'll all go today before the big concert tonight. But, the rain certainly lifts the spirits of the town. It's incredible that Queensland Rail and Horizon, the freight company, they bought all of the gear up for our concert 3.5 weeks ago. 7 kilometres of track got washed away. They came and fixed the track, and they transported 120 containers. So the rain was a bit of an inconvenience, but certainly greened up, and it's a lot friendlier town to come to when it's green.
And speaking of a friendly town, there are lots of people out and about today. Massive crowds. How many people do you reckon have made it out, and how many locals are here turning out for it?
Well, we can tell you exactly. Most events guess the numbers, but we've literally sold 6,500 tickets to the ticketed concert tonight and tomorrow. So that's not 6,500 people over the whole weekend. It's 6,500 visitors that have bought tickets in town right now. Now, my guess is there's probably another 1,000 or so that are just taking up the free concert. So we guess there's about 8,000 to 9,000 people in town. We've got a normal population about 1,000, so it's a big increase in numbers.
And it's, as you've just talked about, it's not just the opening of the centre itself. There's a lot of activities and a lot of music and festivals going on. Why put on a festival?
The council wanted to make a big noise about the centre being opened. And, you know, we depend on the tourists, so we wanted to put an event on that attracted lots of people early in the tourist season. It's been great for all the other towns along the way because most people have driven here. I was speaking to the baker in Alpha this morning, which is a tiny town. He's been selling 200 pies every day for a week of the travellers coming through to the Waltzing Matilda Festival.
That's fantastic. And of those events, and maybe the pies as well, what are you most looking forward to out here for the Way Out West Festival?
Well, it's interesting. Last night, there's all sorts of music here this week. Last night, I heard a metal band at the Winton Hotel called Osaka Punch. And I don't like metal music, but they were great. But the one I'm really looking forward to, Jessica Marble in 2 weeks is off to Eurovision Song Contest to represent Australia. Tomorrow night on the main stage, she's showcasing and highlighting the song she'll be doing in Europe. So I love Jessica Marble. I'm looking forward to hearing her sing. And it'd be good to see Willa as well.
And so it really sounds like if Jessica Marble is trying out the new Eurovision song, it sounds like Winton's a bit of the centre of the universe at the moment. Charlie, I'm not sure about you, but I know I'm looking forward to seeing some of these live acts coming up later today and tomorrow.
It sounds fantastic. Melanie, thanks for taking us to Winton, where more than, 6,500 already booked in for tonight's concert. And look, the John Elliott and all his crew have done an absolutely marvellous job. And he might be not a fan of metal, but I reckon he might be a fan of this tune.
You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Down came a chum buck to drink at the billabong. I've got the swag in, grabbed him with glee. And
And he sang as he stowed that jumbuck in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he stowed that jumbuck in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda.
What an anthem that is, sung by John Williamson there, and I reckon there will be more than a few Winton locals who'll also be sparing a thought for their former mayor and mate, Graham Butch Lenton, who he'd be a very proud man today, I reckon, as the Waltzing Matilda Centre rises again from the ashes. And our thanks to Melanie Groves for taking us there. Now, though, it is time to find out what is making news around the rest of the state that aren't caught up in the Way Out West Festival. Hopefully Jodie Gunders can enlighten us. G'day, Jodie.
Good afternoon, Charlie. The state government says Mackay Sugar Limited has been charged over the alleged release of effluent water into nearby waterways from Marion Mill. The company is charged with one count of willfully causing serious environmental harm and three counts of willfully contravening a condition of an environmental authority, currently before the Mackay Magistrates Court. AMP's Chief Executive Graham Meller has become the first casualty of the Banking Royal Commission. Mr Meller resigned effective immediately after it was revealed that AMP had lied to ASIC for over a decade to cover up its practice of charging customers fees for services it didn't provide. Meanwhile, the Federal Treasurer says the government's decision to toughen penalties for corporate misconduct is not a knee-jerk reaction to the Commission. Under the proposal, corporate criminals could be jailed for up to a decade and corporations would face fines worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And finally, the search for a missing gyrocopter has ended, with wreckage found this morning near Baffle Creek, south of Gladstone. The body of the 78-year-old pilot was in the wreckage. The man left Bundaberg on Wednesday afternoon but never arrived at his property north of Yeppoon. Charlie, there's more news coming up at 1 o'clock. And I wish I was in Winton. I was there around the time it opened originally, back in 98-99.
Oh, wow. So you were reporting in the western Queensland?
New. Yes, yes. I was the news journalist at Long Reach
for
the ABC.
Important piece of infrastructure it's been for the community.
Absolutely.
Glad to see it back and glad that you've been able to bring us up to date. Thanks very much. Have a great weekend, Jodie.
Thanks, Charlie. You too.
And let's find out how the weather is shaping up for not only the good folk of Winton and the people of Western Queensland, but right across this great state of ours. It's a good afternoon to our Judy Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Oh, good afternoon, Charlie. It's Michael here.
Michael, great to have you on board. I've got dyslexia at the moment. I'm sure somebody's telling me where you are.
That's all right. Oh, look, wonderful weather in Winton just at the moment. That's for sure. It's clear skies, and look, it's 33 degrees there already. So look, fairly warm for the opening this weekend, and fairly similar conditions. So look, a really good weekend there for all the festivities going on in Winton, and really out in Western Queensland, sky's clear and sunny and warm. And so Eurundanji's up to 35 already. So these warm conditions out west continuing, but really the weather today and over the weekend really is confined mostly to the southeast quarter of the state. Look, today storms, look, anywhere southeast of about St George to Bundaberg. In fact, overnight we saw just some really slow moving storms around the western Darling Downs, and they continued all through the morning, and in fact continuing now between St George and Gundawindi, with around 15 to 20 millimetres recorded in our gauges since 9 o'clock this morning in that area. So look, those showers and storms expected to continue through the day around the southeast corner. Otherwise, look, just the odd shower up the east coast, say north of about Rockhampton, but really barely tickle the rain gauges in that part of the world. So look, those fairly dry conditions remaining around the central parts of the state. And really, Charlie, for the weekend, much the same, with most of the weather confined to the southeast quarter and fairly dry conditions elsewhere.
I think there's some on the tropical coast to be appreciating an opportunity to dry out a bit, Michael. They've had more than their fair share.
Oh, they certainly have. And look, and even though we've got a medium to high chance of showers around there today, really, that's just, you know, a few millimetres in it. So essentially dry weather for that part of the world.
And Michael, you've already alluded to those higher than average temperatures. It's been a bit of a talking point, I suppose, all week. Can you see anything on the short to medium term that might turn that around?
just there's a slight easing over from Sunday onwards, but really it's still remaining around average or just above average for at least the next 6 or 7 days for the western parts. As I say, really peaking today and tomorrow with a slight easing chance, but look, nothing really to cool things down over the week ahead.
And how are things looking out on the coastal waters across the weekend?
Generally looking southeasterly is right across the eastern part, and even into the Gulf we're looking at east to southeasterly winds. 10 to 15 knots generally over the weekend and today for the Gulf. Just 10 to 15 knots south of about Mackay for today, 15 to 20 north of Mackay, but getting quite blowy around the Cooktown coast and up into the northeast parts of the coastline where it might get up to 25 knots. And really those conditions don't really change too much over the weekend.
Well, Michael, I hope you have a good one, and we'll catch you again next week.
Okay, thanks, Charlie.
Michael Paik, I've got that right, from the Bureau of Meteorology. In a moment, we're going to check in on another challenging citrus harvest underway in the Burnett. Someone around the office this morning was commenting on just how good those Imperial Mandarins are tasting at the moment, so make sure you're tucking into a few of them because there's plenty around. And we'll also bring you a new innovation that's hit the market that is going to reduce the amount of plastic mulch film that's used by half. Pretty big innovation. I'll look forward to telling you all about that in the next 20 minutes or so.
This week on Landline, how mountain biking helped save and transform a tiny Tasmanian town.
We're getting young families moving into the area now. What regional town in Australia wouldn't want that happening in their patch?
And the growth in Australian vegan wines.
Vegan wine, it is good for everybody. So obviously for the vegans, but equally it's good for, you know, the people that love their big juicy steak.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
0487 993 222. That's my SMS line if you'd like to contribute to the program today. Certainly a couple of your got your innovative marketing hats on. We've already heard from Mark from Noosaville on the issue of renaming cheeses and wines. And this is off the back of some ambit claims by some European countries who don't like us using some of those common names like feta and prosecco and some of those traditional Italian names. Mark says, well, we could just keep the original name but use it in conjunction with the word style. Not a bad suggestion. Donna says, let's take advantage of promoting an Aussie product in the EU market because she says it'll distinguish it as uniquely Australian, which is a good thing. At home, the new name with something style added would again promote it as homegrown. And who needs Italian colours anyway? On with you, Donna from Gingin. And David from Maryvale says, if we can't use all these names for cheeses and wines anymore, it'll be difficult for consumers to look out for what they're buying and it will inevitably drive down demand. So he's saying not a good move on anyone's part. But David suggests, what about we use a slogan like, I can't believe it's not feta? That might add some clarity without getting us into trouble. Thanks very much for those comments. And you can add yours on 0487 993 222. Those Italians and French, they're giving us a hard time on the EU front, but that free trade agreement is expected to bring a lot of benefits as well. So I guess that is the trade-off that we have to make in these negotiations.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
While citrus growers in the Northern Territory are grappling with that citrus canker outbreak we spoke of yesterday, closer to home, growers have a challenge of a different kind. The mandarin harvest is in full swing, and with it has come an impending domestic oversupply. Yes, again. Central Burnett grower Chris Benham told Jessica Schremer it's why many growers are moving away from the Imperial Mandarins and starting to grow different varieties to target export markets.
I think it's heading in the opposite direction. We are focusing very much on the export markets at the moment. It's due to the oversupply of the Imperial Mandarins. We can't export them. They don't have a very long shelf life. You have to pick them, pack them, get them to the markets, and we can't put them in cold storage. So they should be fresh. Sometimes they don't look fresh, but they are fresh.
And has that really changed the dynamics of the market within the last few years? I mean, it's not only you who's affected by that. There are many growers in Australia who are affected with the oversupply.
Yes. Some people are considering whether to continue with the imperial mandarins. When they have to replant a block, they may consider that it's not the way to go and there's more openings in the export market.
So with your focus on the export market, are you sad diminishing your supply to the local market, or is it just a decision that you had to make as a grower?
We still have a fair bit to go on to the domestic market. I mean, at this stage, we don't export navels. We don't export red grapefruit. So there's certain varieties that we concentrate on in Australia, on the domestic market, but then we focus on another area for the export varieties.
And how many trees do you have in total?
Gosh, oh, well over 100,000.
With your produce, with the crop this year, has it been affected by any weather events?
No, we've had a very good year. It's usually about this time or another couple of weeks' time when the rain hits us and then the fruit start to break down, but things are looking pretty good at the moment, so we're keeping our fingers crossed. I think with the oversupply of the imperial mandarins has always been the problem. And as I said, that some growers are seriously thinking now about going out of those into another variety, the Aphora, or the Tango it's called, which consumers will see on the domestic market in the near future. They're sort of replacing the Imperial a little bit. Some of our orchards here have that variety, or are putting it in now, yeah.
And do you also value add to your fruit? Do you make jams out of it?
Yes, and there's always concern about all our wastage, so we are always looking into value adding. Wind blemish is one of the main causes of the wastage. There's nothing wrong with the fruit. It's just got too many marks on it. And we have defect sorters cameras in place. So go straight past the camera and it gets thrown out.
And is that something that concerns you?
Yes, it does. It does. But we are looking into ways of, you know, trying to put that back into the orchards.
What can be done to reduce the wastage?
Well, apart from it being juiced, which isn't a return for us, there are ways of protecting your orchard from wind by planting windrows, which a lot of orchards are doing at the moment, and that has cut down tremendously on the wastage.
Chris Benham from Benyenda Citrus Farm at Gaynder. Citrus Central, you might say, talking about the challenges of the harvest, which is in full swing now in the Central Burnet. And as I mentioned earlier, someone around the office was talking about just how damn good the mandarins are at the moment. So if that isn't enough incentive, then maybe that interview with Chris will just remind you that the more you buy and eat, the better it is for our farmers. And speaking of reducing waste, you heard Chris talking about what to do with the product that they can't sell on the market. Well, another form of waste is that plastic mulch film, the black plastic that is... Well, it goes hand in hand with horticulture. I've got a story coming up which will excite growers about the potential to slash their use of that by a significant margin, maybe not half. I might have overcooked the egg a little bit earlier when I said half. I've just rechecked. It's 30% is the claim that goes along with that. We'll bring you that story very soon. But first of all, still on the innovation front, are you using liquid fertilisers on your crop? Particularly, I know sugarcane growers have been looking at that. If not, listen up, because a new study by the University of Southern Queensland has proven that liquid fertiliser blended with molasses, a common byproduct from the sugar milling process, well, it can enhance the nitrogen efficiency and reduce leaching, potentially improving cane yield and your bottom line. This report by Tom Major.
It's long been claimed that liquid fertilisers can improve both soil retention of nitrogen and reduce that nutrient runoff issue we hear about so often from both the environmental lobby and agronomists. Pam Pittaway from the National Centre for Engineering in Agriculture at the University of Southern Queensland studied a blend of liquid fertiliser developed specially for ratoon cane that uses molasses as a key ingredient.
Because the urea in the liquid formulation is already dissolved, when they hit to the soil together in that water, the soil microbes are stimulated by the molasses and they grab luxury amounts of the urea fertiliser and they turn it into slow-release organic N.
It's a biological process that has huge benefits over a lengthy period of critical growth for cane plants.
Because of the luxury amounts of nitrogen and to a lesser extent phosphorus that these microbes take up and they store in their cells, that reduces the leaching. We were able to retain 37% of the applied nitrogen 120 days after we'd applied it.
That's up to 17% less leaching than with a granular product. Fertiliser manufacturer Liquiforce from North Queensland's Herbert River District was a sponsor of the project to get independently verified research on their product. Managing Director Cameron Little says he believes liquid product has a number of additional advantages for growers, aside from nitrogen efficiency.
We give the farmer a lot of in-farm efficiencies, like application efficiencies. They're doing more area per day, safety. There's the ability to add micronutrients like trace elements and that a lot more consistently compared to other industry standard granules.
Cane grower Jonathan Biazzi from Hawkins Creek, west of Ingham, says 5 years after first using liquid on his plant cane, he's now using it across the board with Ratoon cane as well.
We've used Entec and used liquid and used the standard fertiliser, and we're finding the liquid's a lot greener than the other two. The ease of it to put it out, no more bag lifters, no more trucks running around. Yeah, a lot safer to use, I suppose.
With recent floods affecting the Herbert District, keeping expensive nutrient on farm becomes another important consideration.
Because it doesn't leach, probably won't leach as much as a granular, standard granular fertiliser. So, yeah, I reckon in a wet year it'd be a very big bonus in using this stuff. Where you put it is where it stays, in my books anyway, with the liquid, yeah.
Jonathan Biazzi is a Smart Cane Best Management Practice accredited grower. With an eye on future potential reef regulations that could affect his business, he believes the slow-release, lower-leaching fertiliser will prove to be a good long-term investment. But he acknowledges expense could be off-putting for some growers.
Probably a cost thing, because you've got to set up tanks and get another applicator. It's probably the same cost to build an applicator. It's probably the same cost as buying a fertiliser box. So, yeah, that cost there is probably persuading people not to shift to that way. But there's contractors, there's other ways to get around it. So, yeah.
15 years after first beginning his business, Cameron Little says expansion is happening, however, especially around the wet tropics region.
This year we've actually, there's 8 liquid applicators getting built. So we're really seeing a real shift between, Mareeba, Mossman, Gordon, Valba, Binda, Tully, the Herbert and down around in the Burdick and Southern Mackay areas.
And Dr. Pittaway says the results prove that liquid can be the answer to better outcomes for farmers. As she explains, that longevity of fertiliser makes sense for capturing the all-important summer growth stage.
If you think that for Ratoon you put the fertiliser on at stool splitting and you want it to be there for the summer season, summer growing season, once you get into those summer storms, that's when you really, really want your nitrogen still there in the soil. And the answer is with the liquid product, it is there.
That's Pam Pittaway from the National Centre for Engineering and Agriculture, that's associated with the University of Southern Queensland. In the north, Mackay agronomist Tony Crowley. Well, he reckons that this research is just what the doctor ordered for growers.
Molasses research has definitely been proven. Farmers have been doing that for the last 50 to 100 years and getting good results out of the molasses, adding the urea to it and using the molasses ability to retain some of that nitrogen in the soil for longer periods. There's never been proper research completed on it, whereas USQ has completed that research and their findings are quite significant and there's something we've got to take a look at. The problem we've got with liquid fertilisers is over the years it was just virtually throw a compound into a drum, mix it up and spray it on, but we're getting smarter with that as we go further down the track, so we're putting the right compounds in the right spot.
Agronomist Tony Crowley just talking about the importance of being able to back up these better practices with solid research, and the funding for that research, by the way, has come through the Australian Commonwealth Innovation Connections Grant, which has been given to Little and Sons Agricultural Services. Now, if hearing that story has piqued your interest and you'd like to find out more, you can find Tom Major's online story at abc.net.au/rural, or jump onto the Queensland Country Hour Facebook page and you can follow the links there.
You're listening to the Country Hour. on ABC Radio Queensland.
Now, one of the big innovations in horticulture, or certainly one of the big problems, is the fight to reduce plastic waste. And now two Brisbane brothers reckon that they've come up with a shrinking mulch film that they claim will allow farmers to use 30% less plastic on their crops. Their invention has also been named in the world's top 10 of new agricultural products for this year at the world's largest agricultural expo in California earlier this year. Now, the two ex-UQ Business School students, Rob and Mark Trenchant, told our reporter Jessica Schremer at their factory in Brisbane how they came up with the idea.
Well, we were actually trying to develop a biodegradable mulch film. And the polymers for biodegradable mulches are very expensive, so we were trying to find a way to make the product stronger and thinner as well. And while we couldn't get the product to biodegrade properly, what we did come up with is a product that is much thinner and much stronger than anything else in the market.
And how do primary producers benefit from the product?
So, in terms of the growers that we work with, it's a cheaper product for them to use at the start of the season. At the same time, they're able to put it down on the ground about 15% faster than anything else. And come the end of the season, they're able to pick it up easier because it's so much stronger. And at the same time, it means there's less plastic that they have to dispose of at the end of the year. So there's less plastic going to landfill, so in that respect, it's much better for the environment as well. With our product, because it actually shrinks when it's exposed to the sun, it flaps up and down a lot less in the wind. And what that means is that there's less damage to your plants. It also retains a lot more heat in the soil and stops the loss of moisture through that pumping up and down of the plastic. So the farmer's going to use less plastic. We've never actually done the scientific testing on it, but we believe that there would be an increase in yield and a decrease in damage to crop caused by the plastic itself.
Co-founder and general manager Mark Trenchard says there are three other manufacturers of agricultural mulch film in Australia, yet he hopes to see their unique technology on the global market soon.
We're the only ones with the patented solar shrink product that shrinks in the sun, is stronger, thinner. So yeah, we are unique in that aspect.
Is it currently just available here in Australia?
Currently, we only have capacity to produce for Australian farmers, but we are thinking of moving to the USA, to Europe, to India, to China. It's a huge global market. The global market for our product is close to $5 billion. We've captured a significant portion of the Australian market in a very short time, and we've had some great traction with trials that we've done in the USA with farmers and with universities over there.
How many farmers do you supply in the market space?
In terms of a number, it's very difficult to quantify because, or it's easy to quantify, but the volume that we supply in terms of the actual, you know, kilograms or volume of product, we supply about 50% of the market.
That is mulch film specialists Rob and Mark Trenchant speaking to Jessica Schremer about their patented solar shrink mulch film innovation. Gosh, they're trying to trip me up today. They have patented their solar shrink mulch film innovation, and as you heard in that interview there, tackling the key challenge for growers, which is, of course, the cost of biodegradable plastics.
NRL. Links up right to Luke Brooks. Lovely pass on the angle, Benji Marshall. The Bulls play the metre out a little. Then he got it across for Benji Marshall. He steps his way through to get his second. Oh, the old bloke's playing on young legs again. West Tigers, they are brilliant.
ABC Grandstand.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Every game, every weekend.
NRL.
NRL.
Grandstand NRL.
On ABC Radio.
In a moment, we will be checking in on the Queensland livestock markets. And while those cattle prices, as you've been hearing this week, are still on the decline, it's not all bad news, according to an outlook by agribusiness banker Rabobank. Its beef cattle seasonal outlook was released this week and indicates that overall beef production is set to increase by 3% this year, with cattle slaughter numbers on the rise. The report points to a combination of increased supply, reduced producer demand, and weaker global prices that have been easing domestic cattle prices back from those heady heights of only last year. Here's the Rabobank Senior Animal Proteins Analyst, Angus Gidley-Baird.
Well, we think it's going to fare quite well. I mean, that's in the context where
you know, we're off the back of effectively a record year in 2017 or in 2016 as well. Cattle prices picked up, and we've had record prices, but you know, they were well outside of probably what would be expected to have been an ordinary range. So, you know, prices will come back, and there are a number of pressures in the system that will cause them to do that. But still, we think this year, 2018, is going to be a pretty positive year for the cattle industry.
What, I guess, are you foreseeing are going to be our sort of main export markets? Is there any surprises in there this year that are, you know, differ from last year?
In terms of our box trade, you know, we'll continue to supply into a range of markets. We've got some great free trade agreements that enable us to get some good access, particularly to places like Japan. Got some good access into China, although we're facing increasing competition from a whole lot of other suppliers into China. We'll see increase or very stiff competition in Japan and South Korea from the US, who is increasing their production or continuing to increase their production at very strong rates. And then the US market itself, that's another one I've got as a bit of an outlier. Well, not an outlier, sorry, but one to really watch, because, again, it could shape the Australian beef industry this year, in the sense that they've had some fairly dry conditions at the start of the year. It has rained now, so it's alleviated some of that pressure. But with their large production, cattle prices might come off. If it gets dry over there, we might see a larger than normal cow kill over there. That might subdue some of the demand for the Australian lean trimmings going to that US market.
Analyst Angus Gidley-Baird speaking with Courtney Fowler. Now, despite those prices coming off so dramatically in the last month or so, there was a bit of bounce in the cattle job. Richard Thompson has been watching the prices at the Gracemere sale yards. G'day, Richard.
Good afternoon, Charlie. Good afternoon, listeners. There was a slight decrease in numbers of 325 head, with a yarding of 3,965 at CQLX this morning. Cattle have been drawn from the local areas, along with a good percentage from North Queensland as far away as Richmond, and a lot of cattle from the Collinsville and Bowen areas. We have a full field of buyers present, and competition was improved for cows mostly, with other categories again a shade easier. Grown steers to feed make to 265 at the time of this report. However, there is only a small sample sold so far. Grown heifers have sold to 238 to the trade, with an average of 218 for the best. Plain cows to restock has improved to average 162 for the best up-framed cows. And heavy four-score cows made to 212, average 203. Heavy bulls sold to 234 and average 227 cents. This has been Richard Thompson, the National Livestock Reporting Service of the MLA.
And now to check in on how livestock markets fared in Queensland this week, it's over to Les Klein.
Good afternoon, Charlie. 1,039 cattle in Toowoomba on Monday sold at rates mainly cheaper, in line with the trends we saw last week. A few bullocks sold to the wholesale meat trade at 280.2 cents, with heavy cows 216 to average 205 cents. Yearling steers sold up around 337.2, the heifer component to 274.2. Calves and vealers made to 320.2. One Mickey Mouse calf knocked at 600 cents. Live export quotes out of the north were 290 cents for steers and heifers on 270 cents. Heavy lambs eased to 581 cents a kg carcass weight this week, with mutton on 427 cents. At the pig sale at Harristown, prime pork made to $175, bacon to $160, sows made to $175, and forward store pigs to $100. Roma Centre presented 8,250 head for their store cattle market on Tuesday. The market was generally easier, particularly for the inferior lines. Calves made to 328, light yearling steers sold up to 344 cents for an average of 314. And 4,900 cattle at Dalby suffered further losses this week, some inferior lines by up to 20 and 30 cents a kg in places. However, a few supplementary fed bullocks and heavy steers made around 268 cents to 275.2. Heavy cows sold at 216, with the better yearling cattle at 324 for an average of 305. Heavier types at 288.2. The Queensland Cattle Market Index finished the week on 259.6 points, That was down 11.3 points for the week. Les Klein in Brisbane reporting for the Country Hour.
Good on you, Les. Thanks so much for all that information. And that is the Country Hour for today and for the week. Thanks to all of our reporters around the state. They work hard, but geez, it's worth it when we get to put their stories on the radio. And the executive producer of the Country Hour is Jodie Gunders. If you're in Winton or heading that way, I hope you have a ball at the Way Out West Festival. And whatever you're up to, have a terrific and safe weekend. It's 1 o'clock.